Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online, sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. And a terrific service department that backs it all up every step of the way. At Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. All right, so it's Big Ten Media Days. Tony Petitti, the commissioner of the Big Ten, talking with the media today, just outlining his vision for the future of the conference. Not a lot of really great significant answers, but in general outlining how he feels about transitioning USC and UCLA in, about the TV contracts, about the future of the sport, about the possibility of further realignment. I mean, all general answers by him along the way, which is to be expected. And of course, James Franklin, Adisa Isaac, Keaton Ellis, and Olu Fashanu all out there for this event in Chicago. Now, the pressure is on Northwestern and, to a little bit of a point, Iowa. Little bit. The Northwestern story overshadows everything. And there's nothing that the players for Northwestern can answer at all. Zero. With everything going on. And David Braun, the interim head coach, has only been on the staff since January. That's why he was selected as the interim coach. So they can't say much. And then Iowa, to a point, excuse me, but it is not insignificant that Noah Shannon had to pull out. And it's not insignificant that Iowa's coaching staff and the media relations department acted like they didn't know. I mean, they put him on the list. Well, if you're one of the guys that's being looked into as one of the 26 back in May that did they put down any wagers, which based on NCAA rules in May, you could not do at all. Why would you put him on the list to go to be at media days? And then he has to pull out and essentially tell everybody, here's the reason why. And I don't want to hear about the leadership part. He's showing great leadership. How about you guys showing leadership and not sending him and don't even ask him to go? Oh, well. Tommy McCarthy will talk about the Phillies. They're on a great run. We'll talk with him in a moment. Great to have you with us today. Brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. And online at sunburymotors.com. He is one of the best in the business. He is the voice on TV of the Philadelphia Phillies, Tommy McCarthy. T-Mac, great to have you back.
Thanks for having me, Jonesy. I appreciate you calling again. It's awesome. Hope you're doing well.
Doing really well, and the team you're broadcasting for right now is doing really well. They're not only winning, Tommy, I think they're fun to watch. You're up in that booth every night. How fun are they to watch?
Yeah, I agree with that, Steve. I mean, I think that, you know, over the course of my years with the Phillies, we've had teams that there's just an enjoyment to them. But we've had other teams where it's, you know, you're thinking about it, going, how are we going to get some runs? How are we going to pitch? You know, this team has it all. They've got personality, too. It really has been a good run. I think it starts at the top with the manager. I mean, he just has it together. He knows what to do. Yeah, it's been really good. I've enjoyed the evolution of some of these young guys like Stott and Bohm. And, you know, I still think even better things to come as the season moves on.
I want to ask you about Robbie since you brought him up. Because, you know, last year he takes over for Joe Girardi. They get to the World Series. When you have talked to him, does he have a sense that there are certain elements now because of experience where he's better at handling it than even last year because he has a little more experience?
Yeah, I think he's a big routine guy. So, you know, the fact that he's now a full year into this gig, so his routine is established. It was always established as a bench coach because he had done that for 20 years. But as a manager, there's different things that he has to deal with, whether it be the media, whether it be meetings with the general manager or the, you know, or in this case, Dave Dombrowski, the vice president, or if it's a community event that he has to handle, which he does a lot of that too. So I do think that the routine, and it's like a player, you have to try to find that routine that gets you from point A to point B. I think he has a better understanding of that. I will say that his people skills are way off the charts. And even though I knew that when he was the bench coach, it's been put into concrete now that he's the manager.
Bryce Harper was able to get back exponentially sooner than most people would from his injury. What has his just mere presence meant to what we're seeing as a domino effect on the lineup?
Well, you know, he's not hitting 25 home runs, 30 home runs right now, but there's still that thought that he is going to. So putting him in the middle of the lineup means that other guys, whether it be JT behind him or Castellanos before him, they just get better pitches. I mean, there's a presence to him that, I mean, there are very few players in Major League Baseball that have that can dictate success for the guys around him. And I don't know why the power's not totally there yet. I mean, I think it's a function of just getting at bats and getting back in the swing of things. But he's hitting 300 and he's driving in runs. So my feeling is it's going to happen. And when it does, it'll probably happen in bunches like every power hitter, like we're seeing with Schwarber right now. But I just think it makes everybody else better. And I think it'll make it even better when he plays first base, because then it gets Schwarber off his feet a little bit more in left field. Not every day, but maybe every other day. And I think that will go a long way to helping this team too.
Yeah, there's certain players I also feel that thrive by playing in the field, where it just makes them feel active the entire time in the game. Guys like Edgar Martinez and David Ortiz perfected the fact that they could walk up to the plate four times and do something.
Right.
But there's certain guys that I think by playing in the field, that I think it energizes them. Is Bryce that kind of guy?
Yeah, I think he's gotten used to being the DH. I don't think he really liked it at the beginning, but I think he would still prefer to be in the field. So I do think it's going to help him. Like, sometimes people say that when you're playing a position, you have to do too much thinking out there. But I'm in agreement with you, with what you alluded to. I think he'll be even better when he's out playing a position. I really think he's adjusted to being a designated hitter, but I still think he's going to be better out playing a position.
Tommy, you've now had a long, long look at watching Nick Castellanos play. What has he meant to what they are doing on a team that has plenty of star power? What has he meant?
Well, I think one of the things that stands out now is with the Harper injury last year, Nick's played the outfield more than he thought he was going to. Because if you think about it, he and Schwarber were signed to be alternating designated hitters. So Schwarber's played every day, but Castellanos has played himself into a pretty good outfielder. And I think that that's going to help when Harper comes back. I think that his RBIs have been really important.
Yeah.
I think the presence in the middle of the lineup has been important. I would like to see more home runs, obviously, but I just think he has figured some things out on a lot of different levels. And even with us, the way he deals with us, he's night and day. The conversations are really good. Not that they weren't last year, but they're different this year. And I think I think you need all kinds of personalities in a clubhouse, and I think his personality and competitiveness and work ethic really helps this clubhouse.
All right, the pitching obviously is a big part of all this. What has been the big difference between the pitching you saw from April to mid-May to the pitching you're seeing from mid-May to mid-July?
I think the bullpen starters have been better getting deeper into games. I think, you know, the June that Suarez and Taiwan Walker had were great. I think what you saw last night from Aaron Nola was great.
Yeah.
But I just think the way the bullpen has been, you know, Craig Kimbrell has been beyond a breath of fresh air with what he's been able to do as the closer. He's pitching himself into the conversation for the Hall of Fame as he gets deeper and deeper on this saves list. And with Sir Anthony's injury and Alvarado's two injuries, gosh, I don't know where they'd be without the guys like Kimbrell and Hoffman and even Soto. I think that their success rate has helped this team. So, I mean, since the third week of April, I mean, they have either the first or second best ERA, depending on the day, in all of Major League Baseball out of the bullpen. And that, to me, is tremendous.
And let's face it, what has that meant to Robbie's decision-making with the bullpen? Because now he feels like he probably feels like he can push a button now, and he's got a pretty good idea what the success is going to be with that push.
Yeah, I do agree with that. You know, he had sort of a revolving door in the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning, which he was okay with. You know, he has even said that he's okay with not having a set closer. But I think with the injuries, it's given him a little bit of a pause on that, where legitimately Kimbrell is the guy in the ninth inning. And with the injury to Soto and to Sir Anthony, Alvarado and Sir Anthony, then Soto is the eighth inning guy with a little of Jeff Hoffman. So I do think it's enabled him to set the end of the game for Kimbrell. And then the other guys, when they come back, will slide into those late-inning roles, depending on the matchups.
You do have a group of guys in the bullpen that have pitched their way into a World Series. And then there's a guy like Kimbrell, who was part of a World Series winning team in 2018, although they went with Chris Sale to close the final against the Dodgers in 2018. What does that mean, in your opinion, when you've got guys that have been there before in high-leverage situations?
You know, it's funny, Steve, when we were talking to him last night, I was surprised when we were talking about the All-Star game, and he was saying just what a joy it was, what a privilege it was to finish the All-Star game. Now, he's pitched in 9 All-Star games and has 410 saves, but that was the first one he closed for a victory. So to have that kind of a reputation, to close those big moments, or have the potential to close those big moments, kind of like Lidge in 08, I do think it goes a long way to the success level of a team. I really do.
What have you thought of Trey Turner to this point?
I don't think he's the Trey Turner that they... Well, obviously the numbers dictate he's not the Trey Turner that they signed right now. I still think the numbers will be close to where they usually are. I mean, stolen bases, he's going to exceed that. I think it's the power numbers and the defense that's sort of been porous that I think is surprising to everybody. Now, I will say the last, I would say, 10 days defensively, he's made some really good plays. But I don't think we've seen the Trey Turner that the Phillies signed just yet. I will say he plays every day. I think we're still scratching the surface on that. My expectation is that we'll get some semblance of that, but he's definitely not been the one, the Trey Turner that they signed for 11 years.
Yeah. Sometimes you wonder if you're trying to go out every day and live up to that. I mean, sometimes you do wonder about that.
That's it.
Yeah, it's a self-imposed.
Yeah, I think there's some of that.
Yeah,
I think it's Castellanos last year, and I think it's the same thing with Turner this year. I do think that there is that kind of, there's that kind of thought.
Yeah, I mean, you do worry about it. You mentioned the stolen base part. You expected with the bases being 4 inches larger, which is a 4-inch larger lead, and 4 inches shorter to get to second, that, you know, stolen bases would be up. That brings up the rules between the pitch clock, bases, throwing over a number of times, and so forth. You've now had, you know, more than a half season to look at it. How do you like the game?
I like it a lot. I don't think we need the three batter rule anymore.
I agree.
That's part of it that I never liked it. I like it less now. I do like everything else, and I didn't think I would, but I do. You know, we had those games against San Diego this weekend where it felt like it was the old days of baseball because the games were so long.
Yes.
But in reality, I really do think it's been good for baseball. I know there are a lot of people that think that there still needs to be some tinkering done. I don't. I think it's good the way it is. I don't think they have to add any time. I don't think they have to take away any time. I think it's good. I find my biggest issues have been still the three-batter minimum and the way the game, not that this is a rule change, but it's definitely a style change, the way the game has been officiated by some of the official scorers where they're leaning more on the offense than they are about the integrity of the pitching. And I do think that that's a result of baseball trying to make the game more of an offensive-driven game. That's the part that's really stood out to me this last year and the last 2 years.
And by the way, I'm completely with you on the three batter rule. It's not needed today. If you want to make moves, make moves. I have no problem with that. If it's one batter, it's one batter. I don't like the three batter rule, and never didn't like it when they put it in anyway.
Yeah, I didn't really like it either. I was more accepting of it to understand the pace of play, but I don't really think that it helped or hurt the pace of play. I think it just hampered the strategy of a manager.
T-Mac, you're the best. It has been a lot of fun, and a lot of fun listening to you go through this, because winning baseball is fun, but how the Phillies do it's fun, and you guys accentuate it. Thanks so much.
All right, thanks, Steve. I appreciate it, buddy. We'll talk soon.
The great Tommy McCarthy. What a job he does on TV for the Philadelphia Phillies. Now, we're going to go from T-Mac to C-Mac. T-Mac to C-Mac. We're going to go from Tommy McCarthy to Chris Mack. We're going to get the viewpoint on what's going on in Pittsburgh. So T-Mac to C-Mac. All right, we tried to be ultra cool, and you know, you guys, that doesn't work for me. We'll come back with more in a moment, brought to you by Sunbury Motors, as we continue here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. On this Wednesday, brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, the best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory, with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee and a fabulous service department that backs it all up every step of the way, all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. All right. We always have a lot of fun with history. Earlier in this week, we talked about the 40th anniversary of the Pine Tar game. You know, George Brett going crazy when it came to being called out by Tim McClellan after hitting a home run. Like, really? Wow. So we always have a lot of fun with that. And when you look at, like, some of the great moments, like, for example, the Pirates' future Baseball Hall of Fame outfielder, Max Carey, scored 5 runs without a hit, reaching base on an error and 4 walks, and the Pirates beat the Phillies on the state 12-2 back in 1913. Right? So, yeah. Hey, something like that. That's always fun stuff that you talk about what happens on this day in sports history. Yeah. And that's why we always have fun with that segment whenever we do it. It's always a lot of fun, too, when we bring in Chris Mack from Pittsburgh. See, Mac, great to have you back.
I was going to say, did you cover that one, Steve? Did you have the call on that one?
No, but my great-grandfather took me to the game. Chris, great to hear you.
Close.
Great to hear from you again. How are you?
You too, Steve. Thanks for calling. And, it's just, I guess it's not totally shocking that for the second day in a row, the Pirates were on the receiving end of one of those double-digit scores.
Yeah, it's been hard, obviously. They got off to a great start, but they're only 7-24 over their last 31. Chris, they're going with the youth movement in full force right now, outside of the guys like Sanchez, and McCutcheon and so forth. I got that part. What's your thought on the youth movement? And because they're going all in on it, are the fans into it?
I mean, look, nobody's excited that they played the way they have since the end of April. Nobody's having the worst offense in the National League since April 30th. But I do think a lot of fans are of the same perspective, the same line of thinking, which is, listen, if we're going to lose with Austin Hedges and, Rich Hill, whoever it may be, if we're going to lose with those guys, hey, let's get the young guys up here and see what we've got and see if they may be the answer to the offensive woes. And so in the last 30 days, their 5 top AAA prospects have all been called up. Henry Davis, Nick Gonzalez, and then in just the last few days, obviously, Quinn Priester, Leo Verpagero, I'm leaving somebody
Andy
else.
Andy Hernandez.
Oh, and Andy Rodriguez.
Yeah,
so they've called everybody up now, and this is where you find out if these guys are the solution or not. And I think it's, to be honest, it can be kind of an exciting time for the fans because you should get an answer over the next 2 months as to whether these guys can be a part of the future or not. The future should be coming very soon, as soon as next year. You could look at it from the ownership perspective, not ownership perspective, but management perspective, I guess, and say, well, we're going to find out very soon if these guys that we thought are the future or not, because if they aren't, and if they don't show some promise over the final 2 months of the season, then we're in the deep end. And I think that's where the thinking has to be at this point. It's got to be in let's find out what we've got mode, because next year they could very quickly, Steve, accelerate from, oh my gosh, these guys can't hit their way out of a wet paper bag, to, oh boy, we've got some pitching on the way and maybe these offensive prospects figure something out. You know, the next 2 months will be very telling about whether 2024 is looked at with some possibility or whether 2024 is looked at as yet another growth year.
Yeah, because, for example, Carlos Santana is a veteran. He's got 9 home runs. Choi is only hitting 167. McCutcheon, everybody loves. Reynolds has been hurt, and so forth. So I want to get to Henry Davis. He's the one that's been up the longest of the group. What have you thought of him so far?
I mean, you love his aggressiveness. He plays at a million miles an hour. I think that's hurt him a couple times. Position that he's not all that familiar with in right field. I think that's really the only complaint people would have is you put him out there in right field, a position where if you do play a little over-aggressively, it can lead to mistakes. It can lead to runs being scored against you, as we saw this past weekend. So that's really the only complaint. You know, he's also aggressive at the plate in a good way, in that he looks for his pitch. And I think they do need to get back to that, what they were in April, which was hunt strikes early, you know.
Right.
This is a young bunch of hitters who, if they get, pitchers are going to take advantage of it. They're going to take advantage of being in control. So I like what they did early in the season when they were looking for stuff early in counts, looking to drive it, sometimes simply looking to make contact and then getting on base and making a little bit of chaos. They haven't done as much of that over the last 2.5-3 months. So I like Davis's approach at the plate. I'll just be curious to see what the split of work is behind the plate between he and Endy, and as long as he remains to be here, Austin Hedges.
Well, that's always been the MO on Davis. He can hit. He can hit with power. He's shown that so far, and he's always been known as a defensive liability. I mean, it's. I mean, he. Hit, I mean, you are who you are. That's who he is.
That's who he is.
I think we lost Chris there for a moment.
I'm back, Steve. Yeah. I'm sorry. I did lose you for a moment. Yeah. I apologize.
Yeah, I said the MO on Davis when he was drafted was can hit with power, but is a defensive liability, especially behind the plate. He is who he is. I mean, there really is nothing on the major league level that wasn't projected when he came up.
Yeah, I mean, and that's why I think fans are, you know, you're willing to take the good with the bad, and right now you can't be picky with a team that, again, is the worst offensively in the National League for the last 3 months. I think people would much rather prefer to have the offense in the lineup, and having that offense in the lineup is preferable to just sort of, you know, they went with the argument for a long time back in June and early July even, Austin Hedges defensive metrics this and that, and it's fans don't want to hear that when a starting position player is hitting 186 or whatever Hedges was hitting. So, yeah, give me the young guys, especially if they're going to come up here and take their hacks and swing the bat.
What have you thought of the pitching? It was good early. What have you thought about it of late?
Well, I mean, Keller obviously struggled last night. He has been more good than bad, though, this year. The rest of the rotation, I think, is a work in progress. This is what happens when you've got young guys who are still trying to figure out what they've got at the major league level. I'm not going to throw, after one start, Quinn Priester out because I thought the first three innings were very good. He did what, and you got to remember, he's a Neil Huntington draft pick, but he did what a Neil Huntington draft pick does on the mound. He pitches to soft contact with velocity, and you know, it just got in trouble later on in that start. So I don't have a problem with that. They've got some building blocks, and obviously yesterday was a celebration of Paul Skeens because he came in.
Right.
The contract was signed. People got to see him go through a little bit of a dog and pony show kind of workout, which is good. That gives you some hope. Now, I think if you're a Pirates fan, that hopefully Skeens will start. I would hope they start him high. Start him in Altoona.
Yes.
Let him get right on the horse at AA.
Agreed.
And then see how much work he can get in between Altoona on September. And if you bring him up here for a cup of coffee in September, whether it's to actually start games or just get a couple innings out of the bullpen, I got no problem with that. Get him up here, and then he goes into Bradenton next February, knowing what Pittsburgh is like and knowing that maybe there's a legitimate shot to start the year at the major league level. I think they've got to be aggressive with Skeens, but that gives you hope, certainly, that the rotation can be filled out.
I agree with you, and I think Ben Cherington did the right thing. In the first round, this is me, right? I always draft a college guy. I do not draft a high school guy in the first round. Draft a college guy in the Pirates position that is closer to getting to the show. Skeens is, and I completely agree with your idea to put him in Altoona because he's been pitching at AA baseball, LSU, and the SEC anyway.
Exactly. Exactly. And I do think that, you know, they kind of showed that approach not just in the first round, Steve, but throughout the draft.
Yes.
They drafted a ton of college pitching. And so that's what gives me hope again as a fan and someone who wants to see that they are thinking the future is closer than you would be, you know, the indication would be if they drafted a bunch of high school arms. This tells me the future is maybe only 1 to 2 years off, because these college arms can go to high A, can go to double A, can go there, can get seasoned really rather pretty quickly, and hopefully be up here next year and in 25. I mean, you would hope that most of those college arms they just drafted are making a major league impact by the end of 2025 at the absolute latest.
Well, it's interesting you talk about Quinn Priester, and I watched that start the other night. And I look at it, Mitch Keller's a good example. Now, look where he is now compared to where he was early in his career. There's a young man that's pitching for the Red Sox today named Brian Bayo. They brought him up last year. He had a lot of ups and downs, and everybody's like, oh, my goodness. And this year, he's the ace of the staff. Okay? Everybody needs time. Priester now is going to get his time on the major league level, and if everyone's patient with him, I think he'll pay off.
Yeah, I do, and comparison to make. If Priester ends up anything like that a year from now, I mean, people will be ecstatic, and rightfully so. I think, you know, I saw someone mention in the immediate aftermath of his start the other night, oh, man, this is somewhat disheartening, or this is discouraging, because they were expecting so much more, you know, velocity, stuff. And my response to that was, well, you don't need him to be an ace. All you need Quinn Priester to be is a good number three, because you've got a number two. You just drafted your number one, and any team, Steve, you know this, that goes into October with three solid starters that they trust is in position to really make some noise if things bounce the right way.
The toughest part for any fan base is always patience, especially one with a fan base that's had its patience tested more than the Pirates fan base has. They're great fans. Great fans, because they hang in with us. We are getting to the end of the month. Is David Bednar a Pirate at the end of the month?
I think he will be. The issue is, if he did not have years of control left, if he were a pending free agent, I think they'd be much more likely to deal him and then maybe talk to him in the offseason about bringing him back. I don't think that's not feasible in this instance. I think they'd get a decent return, but I don't know if it's the kind of return that makes it worth the not just the PR hit, but I think if you look at 2024, and if they really do believe that the 24 team can be competitive, if they believe that this year's team is somewhat reminiscent of last year's Orioles, for example, and just arrived just a little ahead of schedule, you know, then you're going to need a closer next year and in 2025. And Bednar is under contract for those years. So I think what we're likely to see is either G-Man Choi or Carlos Santana, maybe both, who knows, and Rich Hill all get moved. Yeah. The starting pitching market is about to fire up in a really big way, Steve. Right. I think now that the Angels seem to be dialing back the Ohtani discussions, I think you'll see the first move will probably come out of Chicago, whether it's the Cubs or the White Sox. There's a wealth of starters in that city that could be dealt. And then you'll start to see the trickle-down. Teams that couldn't acquire some of that talent will probably turn their attention to a crafty veteran like Rich Hill. And I think he certainly gets moved by the deadline today, if not his next start, is probably his last in a Pirates uniform.
And Rich Hill is the crafty veteran, the definition of it. You know, where his age almost matches his jersey number. All right, so. And he is crafty, no question about that. Chris, Steeler training camp is coming up. This happens every year. How fired up is the city over the fact that the Steeler training camp is at least starting and they don't have to talk about the Pirates?
Well, I think people are hopeful because they see what should be a big offseason of growth for guys like Kenny Pickett and Najee Harris, George Pickens, Pat Freiermuth. This offense should start to really gel and come together. They made the offensive line improvements that a lot of people wanted to see in the offseason. The news this morning that the Alex Highsmith contract extension is done tells you exactly what the game plan is for the next 2 or 3 years, Steve. The game plan is Control the ball. Don't turn it over. Don't ask your young quarterback to do too much. And on defense, try to create what Mike Tomlin likes to call splash plays. Turn the ball over. Get to the quarterback with T.J. Watt and Cam Hayward. Stuff the run better than last year, certainly, and then count on Minka Fitzpatrick. Hopefully Joey Porter Jr. comes of age quickly, and you're able to create turnovers, if not turnovers, at least disruption on the back end, and your defense wins you some football games 20-16. That's not the way a lot of franchises like to do it in the modern-day NFL, but that's the way they've spent their money and allocated their resources. So that's their prescription for the next few years until they've got to start to turn some of these young players on the offensive side into second contracts and start to maybe reallocate that money. You'll see Cam Hayward age out eventually. Believe it or not, T.J. Watt will age out eventually, especially since, you know, he's a Watt brother, so that happens early.
Yeah.
So, you know, it'll happen in the next few years. They'll transition back to the balance of power and resources being spent on the offensive side. But for the next year or two at least, it's got to be about the defense and playing games close to the vest and causing turnovers, or at least causing more turnovers than your young quarterback provides the other side.
Winning's fun. Doesn't matter how you get there. Chris, always a always a pleasure, my friend. Great to hear from you.
Great to talk to you, Steve. We'll catch up soon, and hopefully get back up there for a Nittany Lions game very soon.
Looking forward to seeing you. Chris Mack joining us on the show. And as always, always great to hear from him in Pittsburgh. You know, when you look at this day in sports history, I was talking about when we opened up with Chris. We all know that Joe DiMaggio hit in 56 consecutive games in 1941 for the New York Yankees. But I don't think people realize that Joe DiMaggio also had a 61-game hitting streak in the old Pacific Coast League. I think he played for the San Francisco Seals, I believe. And that 61-game hitting streak ended on this date in 1933. It's unbelievable. When a guy has a 56-game hitting streak, which nobody has even come close to, I mean, the last one to get to 44 was Pete Rose. And you think about it, at 44 games, you're still nearly 2 weeks away from breaking that record. That's how incomparable that record is. And then you sit back and you realize that that's not even the longest hitting streak of DiMaggio's career. He had a 61-game hitting streak in the Pacific Coast League that ended on this day in 1933. It ended 90 years ago today. 61 games. And you know what people also don't realize? The 56-game hitting streak. After Cleveland, I think he went 0 for 4. He may have gone 0 for 5 in that game. 0 for 5 in that game. After that game, DiMaggio went on a 16-game hitting streak. If Cleveland doesn't shut him out of getting hits, he could have had a 73-game hitting streak. Think about that. That's unbelievable, that kind of consistency. Stunning, really. Next hour, Phil Steele, Neil Coulong. We're going to talk with Neil about Saquon Barkley and the Barkley situation, because it's, you know, we all know the running backs had their Zoom call, which isn't going to accomplish anything except solidarity. But today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.